is. I think that the climate having a rest feels like a really positive thing.
Good morning, welcome to the Full Totness Breakfast on Sound Art Radio 102.5 FM with me, Peter Sheeran. Thank you for tuning in again. What's going on outside? Look at that. The sun's back out and a clear blue sky. On the show today, we will be joined by Jane Hughes. And Jane is an ex-psychologist, which I want to delve a little bit more into, Jane, if you're listening right now. And she's also chosen the music today, but you'll probably know her more closely as the person that is involved or half of the setup in the cinema, the Totnes cinema, the groovy one. And we'll be finding out more about what they're doing, what's happening with them, and future plans. So Jane Hughes is going to be joining us directly after we've heard the first of her tracks that she's chosen for playing this morning. And this, well, it's a classic. It's from The Jungle Book, and I Want to Be Like You.
Swingers, oh, the jungle VIP. I've reached the top and had to stop, and that's what's bothering me. I want to be a man cub, and stroll right into town and be just like the other men. I'm tired of mugging around. Oh, ooby-doo, I want to be like you. I want to walk like you, talk like you. You'll see it's true. An ape like me,
Scooby-Dooby-Dooby,
can learn to be human too.
Made a deal with you. What I desire is man's red fire to make my dream come true. Now give me the secret, man cub. Come on, clue me what to do. Give me the power of man's red flower so I can be like you.
Thank you.
doodle
will a reap another.
Ever do ba doy
will a la ba zini.
Wanga but vula but
steeple a doodle.
Ooh, ooh, ooh,
la ha 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 ha. Get mad, baby.
Hadla la la la
la la la la la la
la la la la la
la la la la la la la la
la la la la
la la la la la la.
I'll handle that.
You handle
that? I'll handle it. I Want to Be Like You by The Jungle Book. Not by The Jungle Book, from The Jungle Book. Now, a lot of people thought that was... who do they think it was? Because he sings very much like him, doesn't he? It's Louis Prima.
Louis Prima.
Isn't it? Yes, it is Louis Prima. But I think he was singing in the style of somebody else.
And God, I've now that's a pub quiz question.
It is, isn't it? Oh,
God.
I'll research it while we're...
So if I
get distracted, I've just gone into the internet. Good morning, Jane.
Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome. Beautiful day, looking out the window.
It's gorgeous out there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely love you. Yeah. Why did you pick that song? That tune?
Well, I was kind of, it's one of those, I just love it. And I haven't heard it for ages. And it took me right back to, I think it was released in 1967, which would have made me 3. But I vividly remember, it's one of those memories that you have of going to the cinema as a child and watching it in our local cinema. So, and then I think I had the LP. I think I had a Disney LP, but particularly that one, I think the whole thing about the King Louis, isn't it, wanting to be like a human and sort of having what humans have.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just love it. I guess my parents loved jazz at the time, and I still, it's kind of something I've kind of grown towards, not really like reasoning. And, you know, listening to that song, I think I know why now. I just love that kind of mellow jazz. So
yeah.
Obviously it's something we kind of do at the cinema. So, that was a kind of lead in to, I guess, what we might talk about today.
I guess so. I had that album. Well, not I didn't have the album. My flatmate had the album in his car and I stole it. This is... in the mid-80s, and I was really taken by it. It's a superb album.
And I think the music, I mean, I guess the musicians in, I think in particularly in Jungle Book, were jazz musicians, weren't they?
And
the writers of the songs, the Sherman Brothers, were, you know, I think if you look back at all the Disney films, they're incredible, some of the songs and soundtracks. So,
they are.
Yeah, I think that I chose it for that reason.
Louis Armstrong.
Louis Armstrong.
That's
yes.
A lot of people are under the impression that's sung by Louis Armstrong, and I think he sang it in the style of Louis Armstrong because they couldn't get Louis Armstrong. Now that's how I understand it. I may well be wrong. Write in and tell us if I am wrong. I'm sure I am. I usually am. The Sherman Brothers, they also wrote the music for Mary Poppins, didn't they?
They did write the music for Mary Poppins. So that is another, like, is that called a segue, Pete?
It was good,
wasn't
it?
Is that what you call it?
Yeah. You've mucked it up by pointing it out. But yeah.
Oh, sorry.
No,
sorry.
It's okay.
So this is sort of showing all the strings and sellotape. Yes. So Totnes Cinema, we are opening for our very first weekend of films, which is a bit nerve-wracking and a bit exciting. So we thought we'd have a bit of a laugh on Friday night. So we're going to show some serious films after that. But actually, Mary Poppins was requested by one of our musicians, Eddie Reynolds, who's a pianist in Totnes.
Oh.
And he's brilliant. He does a lot of the sing-alongs at the Totnes Brewing Company.
Yes.
So I just asked him if we were going to do a sort of sing-along type film, what would he like? So he's chosen, I blame him, he's chosen Mary Poppins.
Good choice,
it's a bit like Marmite actually, Pete, because I say that to some people and their faces go what, and other people go yeah, that's a brilliant idea. So we've got a bit of a Marmite reaction to it. But the idea is that we, Eddie and Sue Bradshaw, are going to be singing live before the film. And we're going to obviously sort of have songs from the film. And then if people want to dress up, they're very welcome. And we'll be having a prize for the best dressed Mary Poppins character.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I suppose, yeah, I saw the film quite recently of the making of the Mary Poppins thing. It's with Tom Hanks being the most lovely Disney ever, which apparently was a little bit of a misnomer. But
yes, I think that's Saving Mr. Banks, isn't
that's
it?
That's the one.
So, so we just thought we want a bit of fun. I think because we've all been, you know, nervous and, you know, been sort of shut up in our homes for such a long time that we thought something a bit fantastical and a bit unusual. And actually, I think the animation, the whole thing with making the film was that P.L. Travis, who was the writer, didn't really want it to be Disney-fied, did she? She wanted it to be quite serious.
Yes, she did.
So, yeah, there was quite a balance. I mean, that's only, I only know it from that film, really. But I think the idea of the animation is quite unusual, having a mixed, so there's sort of live-action people, aren't there? And then there's the animation. But, I think we are talking to Sue Bradshaw, who's the vocalist, and she was saying, we don't think we saw it as children because we were born sort of mid-60s and then it was released in 1964. So by the time we got old enough to see it, it wasn't at the cinema. So I've never actually seen it all the way through.
I have seen it all
the way through.
Yeah, quite recently. And it's got a stonking storyline. It bounds along.
Does it? Because it's long. It's quite a long film. So we have got children coming. So I think some young children, but they might, hopefully they'll make it through to the end. Lots of singing. We're hoping we can sing quietly behind our masks because, that's the other big thing for us is that we've still got COVID restrictions.
Right. I was going to go into how are we playing this because
I don't want to be boring and talk about cubic litres of air, but I could do. We are moving the air around. So we've got some, William's told me to tell you that we have ventilation fans. So the idea is that we're a reduced audience. So we're half capacity.
Okay.
And we'll be welcoming people at the door, but we'll be allocating people seats rather than just find your own seat.
Oh, no more German style coats on chairs.
Well, sort of like, well, no, I'm going to be sitting at the box office saying, oh, and how many in your party, sir? And can I allocate you to table 2? So you'd be given a table when you get there, or a seat, a sofa, or a balcony. So and then just hand washing masks. We're hoping that people will. Well, you can obviously take your mask off when you're drinking from the bar, but ideally, if people could put their masks on. But I'm not. I think we're just trying to make sure the air is moving around, so we'll have the fans on and the doors open, and But that's the guidelines. They're still sort of COVID restricted. So, So no singing out. So too loud. We can't have loud, out loud singing.
Oh, I see. Of course. Yes. People will be exhaling. And
exhaling.
Oh, wow. I see. And all this has to be calculated and worked out then with your cubic meters.
With our cubic liters of air. And so we did have a sort of dress rehearsal on Saturday with our volunteers, which was, it's quite a lot to think about. So we're having to, but we are, everybody's kind of following the COVID safety procedures that we've looked at. And, I think we want to make people, hopefully people just feel, happy to be there and relaxed and okay. So I don't want to go on about COVID too much, but it is obviously there.
It is there. It's difficult to get away from. Under the current circumstances. Yeah. So this Friday is Mary Poppins. And so what happens after that?
What happens after that? Well, so our cafe's been open for about a month. So Fridays and Saturdays is coffee, and we've got sort of chess guys come in on a Saturday and, coffee and cake all day. And then we have Nomadland, which is the big Oscar winner film with Frances McDormand. Oh, Pete, you better hurry because we keep selling out. So every time I put it online to sell, I've sold out within about, a couple of hours.
Wow.
So all screenings, everybody, is sold out for Saturday, Sunday. And then we put it on Wednesday, the 30th, and it's sold out. But this is hot off the press. I've released it for the 4th of July as of this morning.
Okay.
So there are tickets available. So we've added another screening on the 4th of July, which is a Sunday, which we kind of don't always do, but I keep selling out. So yeah, everybody I've spoken to that's seen it, I haven't seen it yet. I'm kind of waiting to see it on the big screen. So yeah, I would highly recommend booking tickets quickly if you want to come.
Frances Dorman, she's amazing.
That's her, yes, apparently, yes, yeah.
I love her work. And I noticed something. I was watching, I wasn't actually watching it, it was just on the telly and I saw it there. And it was Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory with Johnny Depp, the now disgraced Johnny Depp. And you watch that next time. Just watch Johnny Depp. I swear to God, he's doing an impression of Frances Dorman throughout the whole film.
No, is he?
I swear to God. I don't know this for a fact, but if you just watch him, he looks to me like he's doing Frances Dorman. If you, once you've got that in your head, you won't be able to get rid of it. It's definitely.
They look so different. They look completely different.
Oh, they look different, but he acts like her. He does. He's doing. Like he's doing her.
I am going to watch it now. Yeah. That's my night viewing. That's
Next time it comes on, I'm not. You know, it's an odd film. That one, very strange. I'm not sure. It's
I
totally
like the original.
Successful.
What's the Gene Wilder, isn't it?
Yes, the original.
It's the original.
Yes.
I love him in that.
And strangely, it's slightly more subversive, isn't it, than the newer one? The newer one is sort of crazy and mad, whereas I think the Gene Wilder one has that element of genuine sort of. Ooh, this guy's a bit creepy.
Nastiness.
Yeah. He ain't as nice as he looks. Yeah.
So, yeah. Oh, I think I've got a feeling I've got a feeling that film could come back to the cinema. I quite like to revisit that one.
Yeah. Now, the thing about films is because they're new doesn't mean they're better, does it? That's the
absolutely
thing.
Not. No. And I think, you know, I think that's often the case, isn't it? When there's a remake, I'm not sure, you know, how many films stand up to that, you know, and it's been a really good film. Some of, you know, even if it's been a translated film, often you find the originals are kind of better. I don't know. I think, yeah, we, sometimes they're not, but I think often you go back to the originals and, yeah, they've, I can't think of the top of my head now. There was a Spanish one, Eyes Wide Shut was the Tom Cruise version of it.
Yes.
But the Spanish original was much better. I can't remember the title of it now.
Nah, well, never mind. I'm not asking. Anyway, you're not getting any points.
Good, because I'd be rubbish. I'm really rubbish at quizzes.
Yes, it is often the case. And it happens with everything that's remade to a large extent, is people remake something because they love something so much. And you can't get that. Magic element is not the thing that's there. You've taken it away then.
Yeah.
Happens a lot with music.
Music?
Yes.
Apart from music? Oh, do you think that's right? You think apart from music?
No. I think it happens in music. I think that often happens when you remake a piece specifically to just do it again. Whereas if you reinterpret something, not so bad. I mean, a lot of films are reinterpreted versions of old films, aren't they? That happens quite a lot too.
Yeah. So. Or they take a story. And sometimes I guess it might be a story we don't know. Or it might be a kind of quite obscure thing, and then somebody makes a, you know, much more kind of clever or thought, I don't know, but I think when it's a remake like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, which was such a kind of iconic film, wasn't it, the Gene Wilder, then it isn't. I don't know what the Mary Poppins Returns, people might, I haven't seen that, but people might enjoy. That was, a couple of years ago, wasn't it? Emily Blunt, I think it was.
Oh, yes, they're doing them as, well, not necessarily the animated ones, but they did The Jungle Book as a remake.
That was good,
With real action, live action animals and stuff.
Yes, that was good. I don't know that it had the songs in it, though, which is a bit of a shame. I think it was more of an adventure story, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I think it'd be bloody weird if you had a real animal singing. I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. I think that could be quite good.
It could.
The bear. I think the bear necessities. Mm. I don't know. We've got something here.
I think it's time for a track, a piece of music.
Can I go on then?
So you've got four non-blondes. Where do they come from?
Oh, yes.
Why them?
Oh, why them?
Yeah.
Do you know what? We were in the cafe last week, so this is just a little anecdote. It's nothing sort of dramatic, but I've got lovely Charlie who works in the cafe on a Saturday and Cass another Saturday. But and I don't know the lady's name, but somebody came in and we were right at the end. We were starting to kind of do the washing up and she said, oh, God, I've so missed singing. I used to be part of the Totnes Choir and Charlie's a singer, you know, who works behind the bar. And she said, oh, I know, we've got Spotify, let's put on something. And she requested this song. And the two of them blasted this out in the cinema. There's nobody else there, so it was just the two of them. And it was such fun. And I just was thinking, you know, we're going to talk about what's going on in the cinema, what's been going on, but also what films. And this track came into my head, and I thought, it's just a bit of fun, really.
Yeah,
it's got a deep story to it, but just a lovely kind of experience last Saturday in the cafe.
Ah, well, let's have the original recorded version of the vocal acrobatics of Four Non-Blondes.
Brilliant.
Thank you. up years and my life is still trying to get up that great big hill of hope for a destination.
Four Non-Blondes, and that's called What's Up, as we've now discovered, not What's Going On. Oh, that's obviously part of the lyric. Yeah. As chosen by Jane Hughes, who is here with us this morning from the Totnes Cinema. But before you did the Totnes Cinema, or as well as the Totnes Cinema, psychology.
Yes, it's as well, actually. That's kind of it's so, yes, I'm a clinical psychologist.
So what does a clinical psychologist do? I don't
understand.
How
long have you got? you don't understand. What don't you understand?
We've got a minute and a half.
That's a really difficult question to ask. So I've been doing it for 35 years. So I'm a child and family therapist. So when your child or young person or as a family, you're struggling and you think, actually, I'd really like to talk to somebody, and that person can give us some space and some understanding. People will come to me for that reason. So what you do is you train, you do your A-levels, you do a degree, now it's a PhD, it was a master's degree when I did it. So it's about a 7-year training. Mm-hmm. It's about as long as a psychiatrist training, but we get about a third of the money. So I just like to put that in there.
Okay.
Everybody who's out there doing, so being a psychiatrist.
PayPal page for you.
I'm not bitter. I love my job. So I've been doing that. I moved to Devon. That's why I moved to Devon. So I did my degree in Nottingham, and you apply to courses, which are quite difficult to get on. So you get told, you get selected. So Exeter picked me, and I never really heard of Exeter. It sounds awful, but. I'm from Wales, so we don't know anything that's going on in England. So I came to Exeter thinking, oh, I'm just going to be here for 3 years and just study and go to London, or everybody does. And that was 1989 I came down here.
Right.
And never really left. So, I work, we mostly work in the NHS, or used to. So in it's called CAMHS, which is Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services. But given, over time I've worked in charities, and I'm now working independently 2 days a week. Oh. So today is actually a psychology day, but I'm talking about the cinema. So,
yes.
Oh, that's a point. So people, I don't know who listens to this program, but yes, the people that I work with might not know that I'm also part of the cinema. And vice versa.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so, child psychology. When you deal with situations, where does the referral come from? Does it come from the parents?
Yes. I mean, it's so privately, independently now, mostly from parents. So, yes, I would say majority. I mean, or a child might say to their parents, "I need help," but usually, or school, or GP. So it's probably the parents that reach out to us first. Sometimes it's schools. When I was working in the NHS, it would be schools or GPs that a child or young person is struggling. Mm. And they might be showing that through their behaviour, or they might be saying that they're distressed. So, but it's a little bit, it's a little bit different when you work outside of the system, which is, a parent might be worried about their child or their child's behaviour. Or the adolescent might be asking for some help. So they find, and there's, I think, there's just a lot more online now. So people can find us on Counselling Directory or Therapy Today. I think there are lots of different websites that you sign up to.
Yeah. It's just an offside thing. A parent might find it difficult to actually ascertain where the issue lies, or is it me or is it the child, or things like that must be.
Oh, that's a really good question, and it's one that you start, or even in your degree, you start. So I'm trained as a family therapist as well, which means that we see things, everything's connected. It's a little bit like a mobile that you kind of like dangling, with the sort of different parts that move other parts. So sometimes you kind of have to work out with the, where the most helpful way to work might be with parents. A lot of my work now is with parents, actually. I work a lot. So I work in the adoption and fostering area at the moment.
Right.
And often it's working with parents, adoptive parents who are struggling with their child or young person because of the history and their experience, their trauma. So again, I don't want to get too heavy and deep, but I work with trauma quite a lot.
Okay.
So it might be on a very specific trauma, like a road traffic accident, or often it's we call it developmental trauma, which is where, you know, a child's had a very difficult early life, and that early life is continuing to have an impact on their lives, or suddenly, yeah. Sorry, I don't want to go too deep. I don't
know. No, it's fine. don't worry. Our wonderful audience can cope.
Can they cope with that? Sorry, yeah. I just don't talk about it very much. No, it's a very sort of separate.
They're
part
good
of my
with
life.
That. Well, I was going to get on to you do a thing with the cinema called Psychology at the Flicks.
Yes. So that was a kind of wanting to bring my two lives together because, you know, I think often on psychology courses and trainings, people will use films to sort of illustrate points or, you know, look at a film and try and understand something. You know, there might be some very obvious ones, but.
Dominic Cummings did this a lot in his dissertation. Yeah. He claimed he was. I don't know. I can't remember which films he referenced. He referenced Jaws, I think, at one point. Boris Johnson was the mayor of Jaws or something. It was bizarre. He alluded to several films whilst slagging off the government.
Really?
Yeah.
I think often, unfortunately, a lot of my examples of things at the moment are, oh gosh, have you seen that film where such and such? But with the psychology, I've teamed up with a friend of mine, John Wright, who's a clinical psychologist and also a psychoanalyst, which is a little bit different again. And John lectures or trains people in Plymouth on the clinical psychology training course. And he's always used films as to illustrate sort of more Freudian. I mean, don't ask me about all the Freudian stuff. But so what we do.
So what's this Freudian stuff?
Yeah, don't ask me. I couldn't even go there. But I think what's good about John is, so we'll watch a film like Lost in Translation or Vertigo. We did Aliens. Can't think about the most recent. Harold. So we'll choose a film that's got a psychological sort of theme possibly in it. Doesn't have to be obvious. But they, you know, John usually finds something really interesting to pull out from the film. And we kind of introduce the film beforehand and say, you know, these are the themes you might look for. But we don't say too much at the beginning. Show the film. And then anyone can come. We don't have to be psychologists, but quite often because it's Totnes, you know, we get a lot of psychotherapists come and some of the sort of psychology students or just interesting people. And because people feel, I don't know, it's just people quite happy to talk. So we open it up to the audience. So John will do a little, he's always got a prepared essay, if you like. He's kind of analysed the film from a sort of analytical point of view. And he can sort of say, well, these are my ideas. Or being Totnes, people kind of have their own opinions. So then we get quite a good, often a really good discussion afterwards. And people might not like John's view. I mean, that's what usually happens. He might say something a bit controversial. And people kind of go, well, I don't, you know, that's not what, you know. So we might pick out themes about women directors or about, we have, you know, sort of child abuse and, you know, things. There was one we did, which is a really difficult film. It was an Italian film, Il Divo, which was about the president. Was it Berlusconi?
Yes.
It wasn't Berlusconi. It was the one before. Anyway, my Italian politics is zero, but actually it was a really complex, interesting film. And somebody in the audience had a lot of knowledge. And so we'll just discuss it. And we always say there's no right or wrong, that people have got their own opinions. So that's been a really, we were doing it.
I think it sounds fascinating in terms of, from your point of view, you will have seen attitudes to films that maybe you didn't notice from other people.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't see
that.
Yeah,
definitely. And some people go, oh, you know, so what you get is people go, oh, I'm sure the director didn't mean that. Or do you really think that meant that? But actually that's not the point really. I suppose it's, you know, the point is what the film might stir up in you or thoughts that you might have whether the director planned it or not is sometimes a bit immaterial for me. It's more, but also you might, there's a really, we watched it on Zoom. So we had some Zoom sessions obviously during lockdown. And Harold and Maude is this amazing, I think it's a 1970s film, or late 60s, but about a young boy who's obsessed with death, he's obsessed with death, and he meets this older woman called Maude, who's actually a survivor of the Holocaust. And she, through the film, she shows him that life's worth living, you know, that you know, it's, but it's a really peculiar setup because it's about, they fall in love and she's 80 and he's 17.
Okay.
Or not with the 90, or is he a bit older? But when I first saw, though, kind of, oh, I thought, oh, crikey, that's a bit challenging. But the film is just beautiful and it does challenge your ideas about relationships and, you know, kind, I don't know, it's not sordid, you know, if you know what I mean. It isn't a sort of odd, but you kind of, it is about they are for each other.
That's when films really sort of work, isn't it? When they've made you really think out of your normal zone.
And, absolutely,
have an effect. Yeah. That's where the beauty of film can come in.
Yeah.
I just psychologically, it reminds me of that situation with Breaking Bad, and you've got Thingy Heiser, whatever his name, I forget, the main guy. And I was really very interested in the point at when you lose your faith in him. At what point? Because he is such a nice guy at the beginning, and you're completely engaged with him. As he gets worse and worse and loses it, at what point do we abandon him and say, actually, I've gone off this bloke. he's a baddie.
I haven't actually watched it. I have never watched Breaking Bad. Okay. Everybody talks about it. But I think, again, that brings up a really tricky one, doesn't it? Where, you know, I don't work in the addiction field at all. It's not been something I've got experience of. But, you know, I kind of imagine, you know, because I think it's drugs, isn't it, with him, isn't it?
He's not actually, he only makes them. He only makes them.
Right.
I say only, he's the main problem. But it's an interesting angle on the way it all works. And I just loved the idea that you've got a cinematic story, because he's very cinematic, is to have this point where you are going to switch your opinion of somebody during the process of the film. And I love that sort of thing. You think, oh, actually, I've gone off him.
But I think that is interesting how, and I guess that's what therapy is as well, is that you try and understand the person from their perspective, and you usually form, I think there is that feeling that there's, I don't believe that anyone's totally bad, you know, that you'll find something to like, and so, you know, there's good in everybody, probably my mum would say, but you know, there's that sort of I don't work in the forensic field, but there's something on Radio 4 at the moment. I think one of the psychiatrists is talking about working with serial killers and paedophiles, you know, and I think, wow, that is another step that's something I would really find difficult. But you know, you work with those people because they're people, and that they've had experiences that maybe have led to their lives. And so it is a point for me, is that I would, you know, I don't think I've had that, you know, there's people in life that I might not like, but there's not very few. I can't think of any, you know, that you wouldn't do that when you're in your work, that you would look for you're trying to find something to work with everybody. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, it's a way of, it's how you connect. If you went around looking for flaws in everybody, you probably never get anywhere.
That's right. But you have to connect with people. That's
right. You wouldn't be able to function.
It's what is it that, no, that's true.
Yeah.
And then at some point you have to go, actually, that person is just not, you know, I think that happens as well in friends, or, you know, people that we're just not going to get each other, or this friendship isn't really working for me. And, you know, I think there is that point sometimes you kind of draw a line, don't you, and think, okay, I kind of...
It can happen.
Right,
bit of music.
Bit of music, now, what are we going for?
1960s person, Canned Heat. Everybody know what I'm doing once we started that. why this one? Why have you chosen Canned Heat on the road again?
Canned Heat on the road. Well, I think, again, I was trying to think about the films that we've got coming up this weekend. So Nomadland, you know, it's about this woman who takes to the road, doesn't she? She's lost everything. And off she goes on to, I haven't seen it yet, so I'm kind of waiting for the whole, you know, film experience. But I guess I chose it for that reason, was that I just love the tones. I love the sound of it. I didn't know what era it was from. I like the guy's voice, but it was this feeling of on the road again, was, you know, maybe feeling Oh, and partly, you know, maybe we'll get released from this limited lockdown that, you know, we'll be able to go and get in our vehicles and get on the road. But I just thought it was, I like the next song sort of ties in with it as well. But maybe, are you going to play the other one as well?
I am.
Later.
Yeah.
Yes, we've got time for that. Okay. Yeah. So I'll say why I've chosen that one. But I think it was kind of, this one was linking in with the feeling of Nomadland and people sort of on the road.
But I'm out on the road again. I'm on the road again. But I'm so tired of crying. But I'm out on the road again. I'm on the road again. I ain't got no woman just to call my special friend. You know the first time I traveled out in the rain and snow, in the rain and snow. You know the first time I traveled out in the rain and snow, in the rain and snow. I didn't have no pharaoh, not even no place to go. And my dear mother left me when I was quite young, when I was quite young. And my dear mother left me when I was quite young, when I was quite young. She said, Lord, have mercy on my wicked son. Don't you cry no more, don't you cry no more. Take a hint from me, mama, please. Don't you cry no more, don't you cry no more. Cause it's soon one morning, down the road I'm gone. But I ain't going down that long old lonesome road all by myself. But I ain't going down that long old lonesome road all by myself. I can't carry you, baby, gonna carry somebody else.
On the road again, Canned Heat, and as the hypnotic one chord drone, which is throughout the whole song, so it doesn't change key or anything, is love that. It's actually really good, that song. Although the temptation to take the Mickey out of it is irresistible.
Well, we were doing the karaoke, weren't we, while it was playing? Yes. So come on, confess that you were singing away.
I was singing
and making all sorts of strange sounds. So, you know.
It shows we do listen to the songs. We do listen to them, folks. Yeah. We do. Yeah. So that is, is that in Nomadland then, the one you're showing?
I cheated last night. I'm not, you know, I don't have a whole record collection at home, surprisingly. So I went on Spotify, which, you know, but actually when I was looking at the soundtrack, because there's some really lovely music with the film Nomadland. And sometimes before the film, we'll play some of the music just to get people in the mood. You might not notice it when you come in, but usually in the background, there's some relevant music. And I think one of the tracks, I kind of listened to it, and it was the crew singing, or maybe it was, you know, the cast and crew singing a bit of On the Road Again. So it kind of reminded me of the tracks, and then I went back and found it. And really surprised that it was 68, Pete. That was really surprising. I thought it was
Yeah, 1968, released April 24, 1968. Just get the facts out there.
Forget your facts out.
Yeah,
yes,
I don't want any fake news, not on this show.
Because you sound so intelligent. You know, you've got these facts at your fingertips, haven't you?
I have, yeah. It's called the internet.
Yeah, literally your fingertips.
Yeah. So what's going to... you've had some... done some... not remedial work, so you've been tarting the place up, so I
see.
Oh,
come on. Tarting the place up? That sounds a little bit crass.
Sorry.
We've been making it look even more beautiful. Yes. So we've been a bit sort of sneaky, not sneaky, but I've been putting little photographs on Instagram and Facebook of our new stained glass. Because I didn't really want to give it away until it's finished, and now people come in and go, "Where's the stained glass?" And I go, "You just walked through the door, so they don't see it." So everybody, when you come down the lovely little passageway to our cinema, we've now got a very grand door built all by hand by William Johnson, my other half, literally from scratch. So from the wood on the framework to the metal on the window, I'm boasting because he's done an amazing job, and it's all down to William. So we've got a beautiful, it was inspired by a door, an Art Deco, Art Nouveau door in Prague. So we've got this lovely brass door with stained glass panelling and a big round.
He's very handy, isn't he? That William.
He's very handy. He's got it's very annoying because he'll say, "Oh, let's have a door like that," and he'll go, "Oh dear, that's rather expensive, but not, I can't afford that." "Oh, I know, I'll make it."
Yeah.
And you think, "Oh God." So about 3 months, our sitting room was full of glass. I'm literally looking at it still. It's still here, bits of glass. And he just goes, sounds really sad. He goes on YouTube and watches videos and works it all out. So
yeah, I know how he feels. I do a lot of that. You can learn a lot from YouTube. Yeah, it's a shortcut to the
it's
best
amazing what you can find.
Yeah. It is incredible.
There are people on YouTube spending their lives.
Yeah.
And now, you know, but obviously, stained glass and it was also a bit of a family. I suppose it was a family contribution. So our youngest daughter, helped design the circular window. So I must give credit to Tilly Hughes Johnson.
Yeah.
And we all had a little sort of our penny's worth. It's a kind of joint effort, but really pleased with it. So that was the idea that the door, and people again might remember that there was a really awful 70s plastic library door and a lean-to, asbestos-roofed lean-to was our foyer. Because I think people were just so focused on coming in and saying hello and talking to the box office and coming into the film that you didn't even notice the horror that you walked through. So now it's all very beautiful, and we've, you know, painted it new colours, and we've got, you know, but hopefully it just looks like the cinema always has been. I don't think that's always a kind of compliment, I think, when it just works. People don't really notice it, do they? But
I think the element of the cinema that has been so much fun is that shabby to say the least in some cases, but that was the fun of it. You were part of the whole setup.
It's work in progress. That's what I always say to people. It's never finished. It's a bit like the cathedral maybe in Barcelona, you know, it's never going to be finished. But so I think people are part of that process. Yeah, they see, you know, and I think that's the danger. If we over finished it, it would be like, you know, it would be a sort of just a cinema. But because it's work in progress and people can see developments. I mean, the other development, I mean, we haven't touched the walls. I have to say that again publicly. The walls are still crumbling and, you know, that's very much still a feature. But the balcony, people probably won't even have noticed that, but it was kind of wood slatted. It was always
waiting for a frontage.
Yeah. Yes, so it has its frontage now. Nice. So it's fronted. And it's lightened the place up because it's kind of light plaster work. Because people go, "Gosh, was that skylight here before?" Because we've got a huge skylight, which has always been there.
Yeah.
But I think because the balcony's now been plastered, it's lightened the whole room. So during the day, the cafe, you know, it just feels lighter. And and obviously in the evening, we close the iris and it's all dark and cinematic again. But yeah, that's the other big change, which I think people will notice. They'll say something's different, but you know,
we've got to go, Jane.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, if we're not careful, we're going to crash into the next program. And
Okay, we're not allowed to do that. Okay.
Can't do that.
Sorry about that.
No apologies needed. We've got to make way for Morning Connections coming up at 9 o'clock. So thank you so much, Jane Hughes, for joining us on the show today. Good luck with the cinema.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. And we'll see you soon, hopefully, in the actual cinema.
Yes, definitely. And thank you for listening, everyone. This has been the Full Tottenham Breakfast on Sound Art Radio 102.5 FM, and we're breaking off with In Excess and Need You Tonight.
Let you know, you're one of my kind.